you know, a lot of cultures I worked in, that's what I see. It seems like for a while people tread along like, oh, we're doing something really good. And then these nasty politics, kind of the cancer of that bad employee enters, and it just becomes nasty games that are played. I think that's part of the purpose issue, frankly.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This isn't just a podcast. It's a front row seat into how elite leaders build iconic teams. The kind of leaders who spot potential others might overlook, who build cultures that people don't want to leave, and who set the bar and then raise it. Work and how we work is evolving at a rapid pace like no time in our history. Our guests will give you insights on how to stay out in front when it comes to leadership, management, AI, and developing the skills that actually matter. Whether you're a founder, hiring manager, or just obsessed with building teams the right way, this is your spot. If this is your first time here, welcome. Hit that subscribe button, drop a rating, tell a friend who gets it. To our longtime listeners, of course, we appreciate you. Now I want to get into today's guest. He doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to give him a big one. We're talking to Brad Wilson, and Brad is a senior HR leader, speaker, and author with over 20 years of experience in organizational development, employee retention, and cultural transformation. He holds so many advanced credentials, MSS, HRM, SPHR, GPHR. We can go into every acronym in the book, but he's grounded in this authority in both practice and learning. And recently, he released a new book called Good Works, which offers a roadmap for building workplaces defined by kindness, purpose, and peak performance. A speaker who brings real-world insight and bold conviction to why culture matters now more than ever, and that's a topic that we love on this show. Brad, how you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm doing great, Oz. Thank you for having me.
You got it, man.
Great show. Excited to be here.
Let's talk here. We talked a lot about your background, organizational development, employee retention, culture. Those are all HR topics. And so I'm really interested. Most people I ask, how did you get into HR? It wasn't something at 8 years old that they wrote in fourth grade book about what they wanted to be when they grew up. Usually it's something that took a more circuitous route. So I'd love to hear about how you got involved with HR in the first place.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into it, honestly. I was finishing up a degree in psychology and thought, what in the world am I going to do with this degree? And my wife was finishing up her degree also. She had another year. And so I stumbled into an HR minor and just fell in love with it. The psychology work. I thought it was great, excellent. And from there, I went into HR. And about 5 years later, I got a master's degree in HR. I worked for the certifying body of HR, HR Certification Institute. And so HR has been my life. And again, kind of stumbled into it. I have a passion for people, how they work at work, how they interact at work, and how they can do great things if they're working together.
What was your first HR job? Where was it at? What was the title?
It was a job. It was in a bank that's now gobbled up by Wells Fargo. It was called First Security Bank out of Utah. And I was a recruiter. Back then it was a staffing specialist. And so I was hiring people. That's what I did.
We call them talent consultants here at our company. Wow, I love that. It seems like recruiting is always a good opening to get into this broader world of HR and the psychology of people and the psychology of work. I love how you frame that. I think that's awesome. Culture is something that's near and dear to your heart, very important to you. So much so that you decided to write a book. We talked about that in Good Works. What led to the decision and what is the book about? What can you tell us about it?
It's called Good Works, which is a metaphor for truth, right? It is good does work. Being bringing your best self and goodness. Honestly, I'm going to use the taboo word niceness to work, I think is really important. And so culture has been a passion of mine. Like I said, I started as a recruiter and worked my way up to vice president level. And I remember being an HR manager and one of the employees that she was a colleague of mine. She was actually in talent acquisition, talent specialist, as you put it. And she would come into my office and be in tears for sometimes an hour because our senior leader was just mean to her for no reason. Like there was no reason to treat her that way. So I just figured if you talk about efficiency and workers producing value, she was so mired in how she felt about being treated that she was a great employee, but I think she could have done things much better and reached greater heights if that senior leader wasn't treating her that way. So the meanness, the nastiness, the politics, all those things at work that really add no value in my mind, they add value to the individual trying to stomp on others, but in their mind, but I just have seen the inefficiency, the bad things that come with that culture, and have had a passion for correcting that. And that's what the book is about. It's about doing that better. I remember as a kid leaving home and the screen door slamming behind me and mom yelling out the door, "Be good out there," right? We go to school, we go out, we be good. But honestly, sometimes then you get to corporate culture and being good is not, it's not heralded, it's punished. And so back to that example of that talent acquisition person, she's a great person, continues to be a great person, didn't really deserve that treatment. But sometimes in culture, business culture, that's what we do. And for what reason, I don't know. What value it brings? Zero.
I think that's a great point. And I think that a lot of times, and I especially see this has evolved, I think, for the better over the last 5, 10, 15 years. But when you have a command and control authoritarian type management style where, you know, you're demanding respect verbally rather than leading through influence and leading through engagement, that's tough to work for. And I think more and more people have realized that's not how you get the best out of people. It might work for a short time, but over a long enough timeline, it's really difficult to work with a leader like that. So I think it's really important that you wrote a book about this. And I think that's a really key thing for leaders listening to the show to take away. My entire mission, my vision around why I do what I do is really around giving people purpose in their work. I think it's a bigger epidemic than we really talk about. I think it's a big societal problem. I find that most people I know are not, they work to live, right? They have the Sunday scaries. They don't look forward to going to work. They don't like the people they work with. Maybe they don't respect leadership. They don't feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And one of the biggest unlocks in my life is that I'm excited to go to work every day. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the people I work with. I enjoy the problems that we have to handle. And quite frankly, that means that what? I'm really engaged in my work. And I remember you and I were talking and you said to me that 35% of people at a minimum are engaged in their work. And I think that's staggering. I just want to understand, what do you think is the implication about this for both individuals and for organizations to have that level of disengagement?
Well, and honestly, that's an old statistic. I did a refresh on that. And Gallup said that in 2024, 31% of employees in the U.S. were engaged. And worldwide, they did a worldwide study, 21%, only 21% in the world are actually engaged when they come to work. What are the implications of that? Honestly, what you see is a few people that are engaged, they're passionate about what they're doing. Well, I like what you said about having purpose and passion for what you do, because the rest of them are not doing it. And you just have a small percentage of people carrying the load, doing the work, getting burned out, leaders that get frustrated and treat people poorly because of performance. But, you know, what's the missing piece? What's the challenge? And like you say, what are the implications of such a low engagement? And it's honestly, I, like you, I go to work to do something great, be excited about it, and employees aren't right now. And honestly, I think a big part of that, I think partly is what you say is purpose, because people don't, they really do need a purpose. If they don't have that purpose, it's just a mess of bad politics for people rising to the top or trying to get to the top while stepping on other people's heads. I don't know a better way to put it, but it's not good. So yeah, I mean, when people don't have that purpose, when people don't, I don't know, feel good about coming to work, feel like they're treated well when they're there, then you have that challenge of low engagement, bad results. I don't know, which is bad.
Yeah, not good for anybody. It's not good for companies. It's not good for people. I actually reversed the statistic. It sounds like it's only 35% of people are engaged, or you said 31%. That's not good. That is 2/3 of people are not engaged with their work, and that's not good for them and their mental health. It's not good for their family. Right. And because we know if it's not going great at work, you're probably not going home and in a great headspace either. And it's not great for the companies. It's not great for productivity. It's a real epidemic. Let's ask this. When you see a professional who has purpose, what does that look like? What does it engage? Because so many of us are not engaged in work. What does it look like when they are? How does that feel as a leader? How do you know when you see?
What that looks like is people showing up early, staying late, seeing the task or the thing that needs to be accomplished as something exciting to them, as something that gives them energy. And when you don't have that, when people are not engaged, we struggled. One of my former companies struggled with getting people to stay like 8 hours. That was a struggle. Like, we had to incentivize them to do 8.5 hours per week. And it was, it wasn't something that they liked doing. Frankly, part of it is you look at senior leadership and their only concern or purpose is what that company's value or how that company value or adds value to them monetarily or whatever, their egos. And people don't want us to come to work and support that, support someone else's ego or support them just making money. They want to do something that's great. And frankly, business leaders can do better in forming cultures that really, and it doesn't matter the mission. I mean, people need to align with what that mission is. They need to find something they feel passionate about. But frankly, in my mind, a team coming together to do something great, it can be anything. But when a team does not come together, when they're interacting in a negative way, when they start playing the games of gossip, stabbing people in the back, all those things, it turns into people trying to play that game rather than just doing something wonderful. You know, a lot of cultures I worked in, that's what I see. It seems like for a while people tread along like, oh, we're doing something really good. And then these nasty politics, kind of the cancer of that bad employee enters, and it just becomes nasty games that are played. I think that's part of the purpose issue, frankly.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I'm interested. It sounds like you've had experience with these environments, right? It sounds like, and I don't want to say PTSD, but it sounds like you've seen it in a way and that you've come in and either tried to fix it or tried to evolve it. So let's talk about that. Do you have, and you don't need to name names, but can you tell us about an environment that you worked in that had a bad culture, what the signs of it were, and then is it something that got better, or did you have to leave to find something that was more apt for you and where you wanted to work?
I have, and I kind of have a specific company in mind where, and honestly, many times it comes from the top. It comes from the senior leaders, CEO, and we have this culture, or we had this culture where the company, honestly, or the organization was kind of floundering and looking for that next great thing. Instead of going to the employees and saying, what are some ideas that can make better? How can we better capture the market? You had senior executive leaders coming in, not looking around and seeing, okay, what's going on that's great? What are we doing here that's really good? And enhancing that, and then looking at things that could be improved and working on that. Instead, it was, all right, I'm new, I'm the new executive, I'm going to make a splash, and so I'm going to tear it all down in my name and rebuild it so I get the credit for saving this company. And that caused infighting. It caused all kinds of problems. And that trickles down to the bottom. I saw executives fighting, just backbiting, gossiping, saying nasty things about each other. And then it kind of trickles down to their departments that they were over, and employees started to do the same thing. It was horrible. And again, a lot of times it comes from that senior leadership. Not only that experience, but another company, same thing. They brought in an executive vice president to work on efficiencies. Instead of coming in and looking at what was good and what could be improved, it was, all right. And I'm quoting, I don't care about capturing the hearts and minds of the employees. They're going to do what I say or they're out of here. And you start bringing in that fear. You start bringing in that nastiness, and it kills culture. It kills it.
Yeah, great leaders are ones that are of service, and that they engage their employees. They get their feedback from their employees. They realize that they work for their employees rather than the other way around. And something I read earlier in my career, that if you have to use your title, right, to enforce who you are in the organization, then you're not a very effective leader. You're not very effective at getting people to follow you. You might have the manager title, but you're certainly not a leader. And those two things are very separate in my mind, right? And so when you have people that are very command and control and my way or the highway, or I don't really care how this affects the employees, then good luck with your company. I think that's something that might get you short-term results in some situations, but I think long-term it's just disastrous. And then once your culture erodes, right, to that level, good luck trying to fix it. There's no fix it there for you. There's no HR organization, no consultant, there's no program that you can put in place that's going to fix that. So
his trust goes out the window. Like you say, people don't trust that, hey, I'm going to come to work today, I'm going to do something great because I'm engaged in this. I don't trust the leaders that I work for. I don't trust employees around me. And so the shields go up. It immediately becomes a game and nothing good is done. Like you say, it's really hard to fix. I've seen executives kill culture.
And here's a PSA. If what you're hearing, what we're saying right now, and this sounds like your leadership, this sounds like your organization, get the hell out of Dodge. I got to tell you, like it's probably not something that's going to get better, right? Zebras don't really change their stripes, right? Especially if they've had any modicum of success, they're just going to keep trying to reinforce and do what they did to get to that certain point. It's bad for your mental health. It's bad for your career trajectory. It's bad for uncertainty. Like, it's just not a good thing. And it goes back to what we talked about. I would love to try to help everybody unlock purpose within the jobs and the work that they have. But in many cases, that's not always possible. sometimes you do need to see what else is out there. You do need to go find that environment, understand what works best for you.
And if I have to say, if I made a mistake in my career, it's I did stay too long in one or two jobs. I did. I thought, well, I can fix this or I can endure it. And it does. It affects your mental health. It affects everything.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
Well, so let's talk about how people who know good culture, when they see it, how do they hire? How do they bring people into the organization? So let's start there. If you had to have a core hiring philosophy for you as an HR leader, either when you're hiring for your team or maybe what you're espousing for the organizations you work at, what would that core hiring philosophy be?
Well, it has to match the culture. And I think many skills can be trained, but thank goodness that I'm going to say niceness again. If you don't see that when you're hiring someone, when you bring them in, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem for the future. And honestly, sometimes it's masked. When you bring someone in, they're super nice in the interview, and then you get there and it's a problem. So then you have a problem you have to deal with and say, okay, is this person going to be a cancer, or are they going to bring goodness to the culture? So honestly, when I'm doing interviews, I interview for how do you interact with others? How do you interact with coworkers? How do you interact with customers? How does that work? Honestly, I wish every person coming up and going to work worked at like a fast food restaurant or some service industry when they were younger, when you learn to understand people, try to treat people in the right way. So I think that's a big part of it. I mean, obviously, when you're hiring for a skill set, that's very important. But there's so many people, and I say this a lot, if you have a technical skill that's wonderful, and then you also have the people side of it, the sky's the limit. If you're too overbalanced in any of those things, then that's a problem. So I would say when I'm hiring, look for someone who has the technical skills that you need, but also, almost more importantly, is look for their ability to fit into the culture, to work with other coworkers in a good way, and then also treating customers in an excellent way.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I actually look for those that have had some sort of, like, you think maybe putting like Outback Steakhouse on your resume might not fit for this corporate job, but I love to see people that have some sort of restaurant experience, some sort of bartending experience, because you deal with a lot of customers and you learn how to handle that. And you learn that whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood sometimes, like, you got to be able to put on that face and be able to deliver for the customers. And you also know when to push back properly too, when things are unfair. So I always look for that customer. I look at a lot of my experience. I worked in a bar. I worked in multiple restaurants. I think a pretty damn good server. I do think that's translated into my customer service kind of mindset as I've gotten older. So I think that's a great call out by you. What about a memorable interview experience? And I'd love if you have one that's bad, but if you have a good one, let us know. Don't have to name names, but I'm interested in something that comes to mind when I ask you about a memorable interview experience.
This always comes to mind when people ask me this question, because it sticks to my mind because of what you said earlier about someone being passionate and having purpose. And you would think as an HR person, I'd be like, I don't know, this is the best interview ever. But this young lady came in to interview when I worked for a financial institution. And I said, well, tell me about a time when you set and achieved a goal. Tell me about that. And she told me this story about how she had a passion for belly dancing, of all things. And so she told the story how she went to classes and she learned and she did all these things. And then when the ultimate, what she achieved the goal was when Sting came on in concert and did auditions to have people do this belly dancing on a video or in a concert. I can't remember what it was, but she was selected to do that because she had accomplished this great goal. Whatever your passion, whatever it be, that might be an odd one, but I was very impressed by the whole process that she went through.
Did you end up hiring her?
That's probably one of the best ever. We hired her 100%.
Did
we hired
work out?
Her. She was excellent. She was excellent.
Did she apply that learning and that relentlessness and that growth and development? Did you see that in her career in different ways other than belly dancing?
Oh yeah. She was phenomenal. And then there's always other stories. People, hey, I wanted to run a marathon and they go through all the steps. And frankly, people who can set and achieve those goals, those are the people that, and have purpose. Like, this is how I gain purpose. This is how I succeed. That's always a good interview.
I love it. Now, you mentioned about asking about the customer service experience and how they handle customers, but do you have another favorite question that maybe you like to ask in interviews?
Honestly, and this gets to the culture part, tell me about when you had a conflict with an employee and how you dealt with that. Or a manager, whomever, customer, tell me when you had a conflict and how you worked through that. That's always a great question.
What are you looking for in an answer? What might stand out to you?
Sometimes people would say, I've never had a conflict. And I thought, that's not a good answer. A good answer is a specific example when, honestly, a lot of times it was with a customer. And I specifically remember one where a customer was not happy with the product and they did everything they could and they solved the problem. I mean, those are great answers and great. That's how you know when you bring an employee in, how they're going to deal with other employees. Is there were some arrogant answers where I'm just always right. And they didn't say that, but they did in the answer to the question. So that's one of my favorite questions.
What about when you miss on somebody? Because we all make mistakes when it comes to hiring. Sometimes we think something's different than what it is when they're actually working. Is there like a theme that you look back on or maybe something that you learned over time that was a bias of yours that you had to overcome?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I tend to probably hire more on the softer skills rather than the hard skills. Those are the hardest decisions to make when you hired someone that they fit in the culture, but their technical skills just aren't up to par and have to eventually let them go. So that's something I try to find that balance of those two things. You feel bad when someone, and they're really good in the culture, but they're just not getting the job done because of a skill set.
Totally understand. What frustrates you or do you think is broken about the current state of hiring? Or do you think it's perfect?
I think it's a good system that we have if people follow it. You have managers, and I've had several, especially senior leaders, it seems like, that don't really, they think like in the interview process is unnecessary and they'll pull someone in and just have a conversation for an hour and not really ask them any questions, not really get to the root of anything. And they just kind of go by the gut feel. So I think the problem is a behavioral type interview where you're getting to the root of people's skill set and how they behave is the best. But you have some leaders that won't do that. They're like, I don't believe in that.
That's tough. Hey,
a lot of them, frankly.
You got to have the managers in the interview to be aligned. And one of the things I've seen is that in many companies, it's kind of the wild, wild west. Everybody's got their own way that they do things, the way that they, how they operate, how they make these things happen. So it can always be difficult to kind of herd the cats, get them in line, show them how structure matters, how feedback matters, how these different things matter. So I love that. And it's something I think a lot about. And something that we build software around is to build more structure, more intelligence and collaboration around that. So I think it's a really good call.
100%, much better. Better than the manager, like, I'm going to show you this ink blot and tell me what you, and literally I've had managers do that.
Oh man, rush out test. I love that. Let's talk a little bit about future of work. AI, obviously, big hot topic. I'm really interested. What do you think its impact in HR is maybe now or maybe in the near future? Like, what do you see from AI and specifically the HR function?
Since I've been in HR, a really great HR person handles all of the paperwork, all of the mundane work in a quick way and efficient way so they can actually focus on people. I think AI is amazing to take that load off, especially those kind of mundane tasks. That we used to spend hours writing job descriptions. We used to spend hours writing advertisements for jobs, et cetera. And now AI will just do that all for you. It's amazing what, for HR in particular, it really frees the professional up to do what they're really supposed to do in my mind instead of
the higher level work. It allows you to focus on the higher level work and spend more time there and be more productive. Do you have any hacks or any AI you're using in your day-to-day life right now? What do you use AI for, if anything?
I use it for a lot of writing, actually. I did not write my book with AI, I have to say that, but I use it for a lot of writing.
So ChatGPT, you didn't ghostwrite your book. Okay, good. I'm happy to hear that. Let's learn a little. Okay, so you wrote a book, and so I'm interested, like, did you have any books that you read recently that were an inspiration for you or any great books or any content really that you consume that you want to recommend for our listeners?
A good classic is Jim Collins' Good to Great. That's always a good one.
I got it right here. Love that book.
That's an excellent one. That is a mesh of just really great data and people content. I like Brené Brown. I like what she writes. She does the whole thing.
Brené Brown's
awesome.
She
does it really great. You know, that vulnerability and leadership, I think, is really excellent. But Simon Sinek is just great too.
Lots of great leaders out there. Yeah,
Adam Grant's awesome.
Yep. I got Start With Why, The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek, two great books. I've read all of Adam Grant's books. I reread Good to Great probably about a year ago, or maybe a year and a half ago. And really, it was important for me to read it because sometimes the context of where you're at in your career and your life when you read a book matters as much as the content that's in the book. And I kind of hit a wall in terms of trying to scale our business, and really kind of reading that book kind of reaffirmed for me a lot of the things that would help take us to that next level. What got you here won't get you there type situation. And I just think it's a great book. It's something that it's an oldie but goodie. Everybody should reflect on it when they can.
It can't be refuted either. I mean, it's so much data there. It's really
so much data. He did a great job and analyzed a bunch of different organizations and a bunch of different successful CEOs and looked at some of the commonalities there. So it's a great read. For anybody who hasn't picked it up, please do. And no, Jim Collins does not sponsor this podcast. We're working on that. Last one before we get to our lightning round, Brett. If you could tell your 20-year-old self any learning or anything that you didn't know then but that you know now, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
I think I said it before. If things are not going great in the company, don't stay there forever. Sometimes it's just time to move on. Do all you can to change culture, but if you can't, move to the next thing. And I would say also, don't be afraid to, I think sometimes we get, especially, and I know you don't do this because you're very entrepreneurial, but many people that get caught up in the corporate world are afraid to break out and do something on their own or do something alone. And I would tell my 20-year-old self, and I want to say this might be controversial, don't get caught up in trusting corporate America. Because sometimes it can't be trusted. A lot of times it can't be trusted. Do your own thing. I would tell my 20-year-old self, do your own thing and quit just doing what corporate America tells you to do.
Well, listen, I actually started my career in corporate America and I did it for four and a half years. I like to think I got a doctorate in corporate America there. I've obviously worked with a lot of big, large corporate enterprises since then. And for me, you know, what I just realized pretty early on was, is that I'm motivated by impact. And I worked in this like 10,000 person company. And I knew that if I didn't show up to work one day, everything was going to be just fine. The stock price wasn't, nothing was going to change. Right. So that for me was hard. And then also like your ability to grow in corporate America, and you know this as well as I do, it's not always based on a meritocracy, right? A lot of times it's on politics or who you know, what, you know, and those types of things. And even then, it can be really incremental growth, whether it be from a raise perspective or from a title perspective. Like by definition, in these large organizations, like you got to work your way up and it takes time. And that's not for everybody. And for me, I just realized that I wanted to make a bigger impact. And I wanted my, not just my compensation, but my ability to grow and develop. I wanted to have more control of that, right? And then that's why I went the route I did. And I wouldn't say being an entrepreneur is for everybody, but to your point, I think assessing and taking those risks, especially early on in your career, can be really beneficial. Because sometimes when you get older and maybe you have a family or maybe you have a mortgage and these different things, your ability to take those same risks, you know, your appetite for it's not the same just because there's a lot further to fall. So I agree with you. If you're in your younger ages, early in your career, test some new things out. Test out a new function. The things that, you know, we do wrong as a society, in my opinion, are you go to college, you go into a major, and then you think you go into the shop. You don't know anything about that career. You might have read or seen a TV show. Maybe your dad or mom wanted you to be something. Who knows, right? You have to give yourself some opportunity to test out some different things and try some different things really early on to only know what you want to do for the rest of your life and what you're really passionate about and you want to pursue. You agree?
I 100% agree. And let's be real. If you give corporate America that much control, isn't it the incremental steps are, that's so true, incremental, and sometimes never. I mean, you can be flat, but also bring in the wrong leader and you could be gone that day. I mean, that's not a lot of control. I think people think, well, I'm going to go work for a company. It's going to be comfortable. It's going to be safe. No, that's not corporate America anymore. It's so, if you're afraid to move out, branch out because you think you're going to be safe, corporate America is not. It's not that at all.
Here's the reality. The only thing that's safe is being exceptional. And by being exceptional, you might not last at that corporate America job, but you'll probably get another one. Or if you're exceptional and you're an entrepreneur, then you probably have a better chance of being successful than somebody that's not. So just focus on being exceptional. Don't worry about safety, stability, security, because it's all in our head at the end of the day. So, and we know, you know, that's really important.
So true.
So I want to wrap up here and look at our lightning round. So I'm going to ask you some questions. You don't know what I got coming here. So I'm going to surprise you a little bit. Let's start here. What's something that somebody who hasn't written a book wouldn't know that might surprise them?
Oh, it's a lot harder than you think to put words to paper and finalize it into a book. So I think, and honestly, the person that I worked with, a person to write the book, she writes books in like 3 months. It took me more like a year.
Oh, wow.
So I guess the biggest surprise is I pushed myself to do as fast as I could. A year was the mark where some people would do it like 3 months. Give yourself some grace if it doesn't happen really fast. And that was one of the biggest surprises. I thought, oh, I can create this out. But it's pretty hard.
So what did you do when you hit a writer's block? Did you have like an activity you did, or would you just settle down for the night, go for a walk? Like, what would you do?
Yeah, I would just go do something else, frankly. If I got stuck, go for a run, go for whatever, go do something else. Because you can spend a lot of time just banging your head against the wall and it doesn't work. So yeah, I would just do something else. And I would do, actually, writing in the morning is best for me. Afternoon, I'm done. So I wrote that book in mornings, not in the afternoons, for sure.
I love that. You went to Utah State?
I did.
Aggies?
Aggies.
There you go. All right, tell me your favorite, most famous alum from Utah State. I'm setting yourself.
Oh, Merlin Olsen.
Okay, football player.
Football player. Yes, that. And television star. He was, I think he grew up in Logan, Utah, where Utah State is.
Yeah, I think there's been quite a few famous NFL alumni. I think Austin Eckler went there too. Pretty cool. You live in Montana?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Tell me the best part about living in Montana.
Big sky.
Okay.
Big sky. When they say Montana has big sky, it's hard to describe the way the mountains are positioned. I don't know, but it is big, huge sky for sure.
Love that. What's your favorite outdoor activity?
I love the water ski.
You love the water ski? I don't know if I would have guessed that. Do you have a big lake around you?
Yeah, there is a big lake, Glens Ferry, north.
Okay. Did you move to, how long have you been in Montana?
I'm sorry, Bonner's Ferry. That's Idaho, Bonner's Ferry.
Bonner's Ferry. How long have you been in Montana?
About 4 years.
Okay. And you moved there because you wanted the big sky, you wanted to be outside, you wanted to enjoy the outdoors?
Wish it was something that cool. We came here for a vice president of HR job. Yeah, that's, I took a job here.
Okay, love it. Last question. Best culture you've been a part of?
Oh, am I supposed to name company or just describe it?
I think it's a positive thing. I'm sure they love to get shouted out, so why not?
What is my favorite best culture? I would say, honestly, I'd say my last company.
Okay, and that was WealthFest?
WealthFest, Inc.
Best culture. Why? What was so great about it? What was so unique about that culture?
It wasn't a startup. It'd been around for a while, but it felt like a startup. We had these great goals we were trying to accomplish and great things and bring retirement to the masses. And it was a good purpose, like you said before, and really good people to work with, honestly.
Love that. Well, Brad, I really appreciate you taking a little bit of time with me. I really enjoyed the conversation. Congrats on the book. If people want to pick it up, it's called Good Works. I'm sure it's on Amazon if they want to take a look at it. And if I'm ever in Big Sky Country, especially if I want to go water skiing, I know who to call.
Yeah, come hang out.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Oz.